coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast. It was the women's turn at the Olympics in Tokyo and a familiar face taking gold. We recap that, plus a drama-filled WGC event in Memphis. And a friend of the show had the week of a lifetime, plus everything we're tuned into outside of sports. And this week's guest, a great one, MLS star Matt Beisler from Austin FC. Yep, pro soccer player. We get into everything, being part of an expansion team, the amazing fans, and a really cool golf connection he has to a world-class player here in Austin, Texas. Plus, we always end with food, and all of it brought to you by our new friend, Mike, our friends at City Bonfires. I know you've got some sort of nice fire memory from when you were a kid, whether it was a bonfire or campfire or s'mores or something like that. But summertime, fires, wherever you are, just great things that go together, you know?
You know, there's nothing quite like a marshmallow caught on fire, dripping off the end of a wooden stick. It really, it's got fun memories all over it. And I'm not being sarcastic. I'm legit here, really.
No, very legit. S'mores are the bomb. We talk about them all the time here, and we love a nice, quick, easy, portable, reusable bonfire, just like the City Bonfires. They're easy to light with a stick lighter, easy to put out. You can put them in your beach bag, your backpack. This is a really cool, easy, portable item that just brings a little bit of party to wherever you go. You could even use it for maybe a little nighttime golf practice session as well, or at your favorite Outlook. You can get them with s'mores kits as well too. They're made in the US. Our promo code is COLFIRE to save 10% off of any City Bonfire on their website. Check out citybonfires.com. Again, our promo code is COLFIRE for 10% off of your fire today.
Interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf and Tosi Snacks. I'm Michael, he's Alex. Alex, this was probably one of the busiest golf weeks of the year because we had two PGA Tour events. We had, of course, everything else going on. Your visit to the First Tee Austin, we'll get to in a moment. We had a past guest have a big win, or really this week, the last week's guest have a big win on the day the episode came out with him. But let's lead with the biggest news in the golf world, and that is that Nelly Korda is the best of all time. Everyone sit down, including Tiger Woods.
Yeah, big time sit down moment for everyone else. Nelly Korda flexing her muscles just like she has all year. And we say it a million times, we're saying it a million one. The Korda Tour rolls on again. It takes another country, another continent, and another amazing victory. This time again from Nelly, who is outstandingly and unanimously the number one women's golfer in the world. And Mike, the crazy part is I think she won with like her B or B minus game. She really didn't even have it all and still got it done.
Right. And she becomes the first golfer, man or woman, to win a major, an Olympic gold medal, and be the world number one all in the same year.
Yeah, so pretty much driving at all possible levels. It was cool to see Jessica there as well, too. I know Jessica didn't quite get to the podium like she would have liked. We were loving that sister podium idea. But nonetheless, she had a great final round. It was cool to have her cheer on her sister and be there for that moment. Because, again, there weren't a lot of fans, no fans, you know, very limited family that are able to be there. So to have the sisters celebrate together and both be part of Team USA in that victory was very special.
It really was. And I want to ask a question now. This is a question that I've been thinking about. I'm going to put you on the spot. Let's say you have a foursome of Nelly Korda, Annick Sorenstam, Tiger Woods in his prime. There's also Annick in her prime, I should say. And let's go ahead and say Jack in his prime.
Ooh, wow.
Who's going to win there?
First because off, I Nelly Korda is flattered that she's in this foursome right now.
Her dominance right now is like is at that level.
It's that thing where she sniffs the leaderboard but has gravitational pull towards every single leaderboard she's a part of. Yeah. And even winning without her A game really shows you how dominant she's been. So it's like, yeah, she may be approaching that scale of dominance right now, the way she's taking over the women's game. And it's interesting how the LPGA goes and ebbs and flows where we have these dominant player runs for 2, 3, 4 years. The question is, can she keep it going beyond that and get to that Annika level of long-term sustained greatness? Much to be seen in the future from her, but obviously the gold around her neck, a big statement to add on to the huge 2021 for Nelly Korda.
It really was. And that capped off a gold medal sweep in the golf world for Team America. Of course, it was Xander Schauffele winning earlier in the week. So America is where golf's at. England can sit down. You created the game. But once again, you're not the best at it. It's all about Team USA.
Our friend Sam Harrop loves that comment you just said right there. Shout out to our friends across the pond. Basically an impressive week for men's and women's Team USA front. We'll shout out Imami Monet as well, too, who won the silver for Japan. I love that she's literally named Monet after the artist. I thought that was really cool. And Lydia Ko got the silver in 2016, gets the bronze in 2021, losing that silver playoff. So good week overall. And hey, men's, 18 under par, Xander Schauffele. Women's 17 under par, Nelly Korda. It was not quite a birdie fest, but it was a solid test and there were opportunities to be had. So I enjoyed the venue overall the last 2 weeks.
I do want to see what I think would be awesome to them to do in the Olympics. And we said this 4 years ago, 5 years ago, when they said the Olympics were coming to the games and we had it last, is that we need a team event. We need, and I think this is a perfect opportunity to put the men and the women together on the golf course and do a team event out there. I just think it would be fantastic.
I think it could be teams of two. It could even be teams of four too. That idea kind of sprawled from watching the mixed medley in the swimming. There were two women, two men in the 4x relay, and that kind of spawned that idea on Twitter over the past week or so. I love it, and hey, let's petition for it for Paris 2024.
We will see if it happens. And I'm sure Nelly Korda will be there trying to get another gold around her neck as well. Definitely. Let's swing over to the PGA Tour. There were two events because we had a World Golf Championship and then we had another event. Let's start with the premier event on tour, which was the WGC St. Jude Classic in Memphis. Another playoff on the PGA Tour for the men. This is the year of the playoff.
Yes, not a marathon one, though. And ironically, the guy who won the marathon one, Harris English, probably should have been in this playoff and shockingly wasn't. Just straight up blew it down
really,
the stretch.
Really
the
fell apart,
nine,
yeah.
Back 940, Mike. The shot he hit on the water in the par three, that's the way you and I miss on a par three with water. Like this had no shot of hitting land at any point. So those are some ugly misses for Harris English. Nonetheless, he's still having a great year. It came down to Sam Burns, Hideki heartbroken again, and Burns and Answer hit it super tight. It's all about getting first in the hole, though, in those playoffs, Mike. Answer gets his putt in from about 6 feet and Sam Burns from about 2 inches closer with the brutal 180 lip out, and Answer gets his first win on tour.
Yeah, we've been keeping an eye on Answer. I think we've all been waiting for him to win for a while, so he's got his first win under his belt. I think we'll see a lot more out of him.
Yeah, definitely.
But you talked about the par three and putting the ball in water. Let's talk about Siwoo Kim for a second here, because he hit 13 strokes on the par 3 11th.
That's a lot. Yeah. There were a few in the water. Yes. Very relatable.
Just a few.
I think at one point after about three in the water, I might just turn like dead opposite of the water and just hit in that direction and hope I can avoid it at all costs. But nonetheless, a true implosion for Siwoo Kim.
You know, this was full tin cup moment, because I feel like after a while there, you have to go like, okay, the pin is on the right side of the green and there's water to the right and you keep missing to the right. Hit for the middle of the green, man. Just go for the middle of the green. Just do it.
All-time implosion. We've seen lots of big numbers like this recently on the PGA Tour. I wonder if there's some sort of rash in like the last like 6 months to a year or something. There's been a lot of these big implosions. But hey, it's nice when it's a WGC, no cut. It's just, I made a 13. Well, that's okay. Still going to walk away with a paycheck on Sunday regardless.
So. Also, one of the best bounce backs of all time with a birdie on the next hole. So that's pretty good. Yes. And then he was in the club, so he took the flight home with Kevin Na, who has the highest score for a par four on tour with a 16. So they were just missing John Daly to fill out the par five there for them. So
pretty nice when you guys can make a 13 and a 16 on holes and laugh about it on a private jet home. That's the life on the PGA Tour when you're playing on the WGC side. On the WGC side is the key word there.
Let's talk about how nice it is on the PGA Tour, because we got to see the ins and outs of how nice it is on tour, because past guest Mark Baldwin Monday qualified for the Barracuda, made the cut, and the whole way through, we got a blow-by-blow of what got to happen at a PGA Tour event.
Yeah, that's right. Our friend Ryan French, a.k.a. the Monday Q Info guy on Twitter, was not only a friend of his who Mark has talked about in the past, but he was there for not only the Monday qualifier moment, but the rest of the week, so he got to be on the bag, and it was really cool to see this, because obviously we here at the podcast have connected you to a lot of guys like this. You know, Mark is a dad of a one-year-old who is married and 37 years old and wondering when these opportunities will come at this point in his career. He said it's been 15 years and he's waited for this moment to make the weekend of the PGA Tour, and he finally did. He said it was everything he could have imagined and more, and that really puts things in perspective there. Right after we talk about Siwoo Kim and Kevin Na flying on a private jet after imploding on a hole at the WGC, we talk about a guy like Mark Baldwin who was scraping and clawing every single week and finally took advantage of a huge opportunity.
Yeah, and he played really well. And of course, if you were paying attention, or if you weren't, you need to keep in mind that they use this new Stableford scoring system. So on Thursday, when I looked at the scores, I saw it. He was at like plus 10, but the leader was at like plus 15. And I'm like, what is going on? And then I remembered that, you know, they're doing a different scoring system for the weekend. So
yeah, that was not much coffee moment for you there. Your eyes weren't deceiving you. It was the Stableford system. But yeah, plus was good. And Mark makes birdies in bunches. He's good at that. He's an explosive player that hits the ball a far way. So it was a spot where he could excel, and making it to the weekend is an absolutely massive check for him. Probably one of his biggest of his career, if not his biggest. Would have loved to see our friends at the Wyndham Championship just extend a nice little invite for one more week to keep this rolling. But nonetheless, Mark is still on the grind. We're going to hope to check in with him soon. But we're going to see that name again. And I have a funny feeling this isn't the last sponsor exemption. Maybe when the fall comes around, Mike, there might be a couple more spots open for a guy like Mark on the PGA Tour.
I think so. Yeah. And we'll be happy to see him out there and see if he can finish with birdies on 18 like he did on Sunday to kind of cap his round.
That's always a great way to do it. You know, birdie on 18 after a week like that. Great, great capper.
And you know, it's a great cap in general, because we've been seeing our past guests do really well after they come on the podcast.
There's a little bump here. There's a bump going on. Yeah. You've noticed this, right? I have started to pick up on this in the last couple of months. Yeah.
Mark Baldwin, of course, doing this last week. And on Tuesday night, we released an episode with Jared Hack, who the week prior had shot a 56 and a 60 in the same week.
60, he was all over the place going low. Yeah.
And then you talked to him, we put him on the podcast, and the day his episode came out, he won a tournament.
He won the freaking Arizona Open. Hello, you know, and he said it in our interview last week. He's like, yeah, it's great. I mean, I'm heading to the Arizona Open at Superstition Mountain, and I'd love to continue this, you know, and keep firing 57. Like, sure. Yeah. Wouldn't we all? I mean, he didn't quite do that, but he proved he's still hot. He might be the hottest golfer in the world right now that nobody's heard of, but Jared Hack going 68. I think it's 63, 64, something like that. Just absurdly low numbers to win the Arizona Open, 23 grand in his pocket, a huge week. And for a guy that's on the mini tours, you know how much that means for him, paying entry fees for months ahead now. And I'm looking forward to seeing where the rest of the fall takes him. Jared Hack is hot. If you're in a tournament right now and you see that you're paired up or you're in the same field as Jared Hack, you may just want a WD right now, because it might not be worth your time the way he's rolling the ball.
He's no hacker. He's not. He's no hack.
Shout out to Jared. Nice win. It was great to see. And like I said, yeah, the timing. Hello. Mini tour golfers out there, if you've got a wonderful story and you're looking for a high finish, it's very easy. Just send me a DM on Instagram at Course of Life Alex, and we'll have you on and give you that bump that you need.
It'll be great. And it's really easy. Alex is a great person to talk to. I do it every week. And not because we make any money, because we really don't make a lot of money here. It's because
Come up with a reason eventually.
There's a reason. We'll think of one that's worth sharing at some point. I want to circle back for a minute, too. I want to go back to something that came out of Memphis earlier this week, and that's Bryson DeChambeau.
Oh, boy. I think this is pop politics right here, isn't it? We haven't done this in a while.
Continue decline into just horribleness as he came out and said, I'm young, I'm healthy, I don't need the COVID vaccine. It's like, dude, John Rahm got it twice.
Yes, he did. Fun fact. I thought the funniest part of the whole thing was like, he said this statement, you know, whatever his political beliefs are is whatever. But he said the statement immediately after saying, yeah, I actually got pretty sick with COVID. I lost 10 pounds. I lost 5 miles an hour on my swing. And I know Bryson. I know how much 5 miles an hour in his swing means to him. Like, he's out there beating balls for hours after on the range, Mike, just to improve by 1 mile an hour. So, like, you'd think he wouldn't take that so lightly. I thought that was a big development that he lost 10 pounds and 5 miles per hour. So, I don't know. Look, teach his own, right? That's his decision. But yeah, it seems like it might affect him negatively at this moment for his golf game.
Well, I would argue that maybe slowing down his swing is going to help his golf game. Look at how he's been doing recently. So
form hasn't been quite there. He sniffed contention for a moment this week, but nonetheless fell short. Yeah.
Yeah, he's just not doing great. That's beefy Bryson for you. He's just never going to win again. I'm going to put it down right now. He's never going to win again. I'm sure we're going to eat those words in a couple weeks, but we'll see. Let's, though, turn to you, Alex, because you had the great pleasure of going out to the first tee of Greater Austin on Thursday and playing some golf with some of their best, and you got to see the whole campus.
Yeah, this is awesome.
So how horrible was your game compared to these kids?
It actually held up pretty nicely. I had a few heroic moments. I actually almost had an ace, was the crazy part of the nine holes I played with these kids. Outside of that, it wasn't that great, and I was definitely showing up, but it was a lot of fun. You've heard us talk about the nine core values in the first tee here on the podcast. They're our official charitable foundation of the Course of Life, and we support them in every turn. It was great to get out to the campus. I had a great conversation with the director, Jennifer, that we'll run in the next couple of weeks here on the podcast, but I got to go out and play with some first tee kids that are really great ambassadors for the program, Mike. These are kids that started at a young age through this program. And you know what it's like when you grow up with a set of friends, you know, through your DI or summer camp experiences. When you grow up with a certain set of friends and you have a good influence around you from the age of 6 to 16, and you have that home base, it was really great to hear from these kids and see what they've grown into. These are kids that are now going to be playing at college and have learned a lot of golf and life skills along the way with their time there.
That's fantastic. That's why we say golf is such a great sport, is that we recognize that there are opportunities to entry with the game of golf, but the first tee is there in order to give this opportunity to as many kids as possible.
Definitely. So it was three juniors that I played with. It was Jacob and Carissa, brother and sister. And I will say Jacob won all three of the three-hole matches. The kid's got a lot of gain. He hits the driver a mile, and as does Carissa and Olivia, who I played with, wanted to shout them out. They were great participants. Glad we got to play nine together. They told me their stories about playing golf. Golf growing up, where they're playing now in their current situations. But it was fun. We shared some laughs, hit some great drives. I'll post some video, and I have a great video on our Course of Life YouTube that is up now from my visit. So be sure to go check that out. It recaps everything. You can see these kids in action. And then you can also see a little of me playing a game I'd never played in my life. Mike, have you ever played foot golf at all?
No, but I've played soccer. So does that count?
Yeah, this was my first foray into it. I'd mentioned it in the weeks leading up to this, but it's an 18-hole foot golf course that they actually build into the architecture of the 9-hole golf course. It's really cool because foot golfers can play pretty much at the same time as the regular golfers do. You can play right through groups. You can play 18 holes of foot golf in about 45 to 60 minutes. And listen, if you are near a facility like this, you just generally like kicking a ball or just want to get some stress out and be outside in general, highly recommend foot golf. I had a lot of fun playing with my buddy Brett at the first tee there. And golf courses should have this more often. This is a home run activity that I'm fully endorsing.
And I saw in the video that we have up on our YouTube channel, link in the show note description, by the way, that it would look like it was raining and you said you slipped at least once. How many times did you slip and fall?
Yes, I had one classic, like running up to hit a tee shot, they call it. And I kicked it and just felt just right on my butt. Just the most embarrassing way you can possibly fall. Thankfully, there was only Brett as the witness there. I had a birdie towards the end on 17, which was nice. Very fun to play the contours of golf course hills and terrain, but with a soccer ball and a larger hole for it to go into. It's a really cool activity. Highly recommend. Again, if you're near a first tee facility or a struggling golf course that needs a little help getting people in the door, highly recommend a foot golf venue. So I was glad I got to play that. And again, shout out to our friends at the First Tee Austin for being great hosts the whole day.
That's fantastic. If you want to give to the First Tee Austin, head over to their website, firstteeaustin.org/donate to give or give to your local First Tee organization. And let them do awesome stuff. And of course, check out that whole video of Alex's trip at our YouTube channel, link in the show notes. Let's turn our attention to the final regular season event of this golf season. It's the Wyndham Championship in North Carolina. Last one before the playoffs. And there's a lot of guys in the bubble that are playing this week, including past guest Nate Lashley.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, I know you're good at doing this bubble check here. I'd seen some quick messages looking at this field that it could be sneaky good compared to what it usually is. This is typically a week off in the schedule for a lot of guys who already know they've cemented their playoff status. However, I don't know. The rankings just look a little funny, and there's a lot of familiar names around that 125 mark that I saw. Guys like Lashley and like a Ricky Fowler and a few others that are in the field because they need to be this week.
Yep, and past FedEx Cup champion Matt Kuchar is playing well. So, like you said, Ricky, Charles Howell III, silver medalist Rory Sabatini is in the field is 141 in the standings.
So, there. Nice job.
Yes, Slovakian.
Rory Sabatini. Rory Sabatini, yes. Ask him to recite the national anthem. I dare you.
I'd love to see that, actually.
Was it Tommy Fleetwood? Who else is in the field? Was another name I'm looking at. But then we can't mention Wyndham Championship without Webb Simpson. Remember, fun fact of the year, Webb Simpson named his kid Wyndham. Okay. If there's ever a guy that loves winning at a course, it's Webb Simpson here. So add him to the card right now. Just do it and think about it later. My full picks will be on Twitter at Course of Life One.
That's right. My picks will be right behind you. I almost had a chance at a winner this last week.
I think
we both were riding high on Mark Baldwin. We almost felt good that week.
I know. Jesus, that would have been quite the payday. I mean, holy moly, we would have been flying out to a trip somewhere, you and I, if you'd won that tournament. But nonetheless, yeah, we both got three wins so far on the PGA Tour calendar. Looking to get at least one more by FedEx Cup time. That's my guarantee, is we're getting at least one win here in the playoffs these next few weeks.
I think it'll happen. So keep an eye on our Twitter for all of that. But for now, let's switch over to Tuned In, where we share what we're tuning into outside of the world of golf. I'm going to start saying outside of the world of golf instead of just out of the world of sports, because the last few weeks, it's really still been Olympics talk. So
yes, it has. I caught the basketball, both men's and women's, and people weren't really enthralled with the men's performance early in the tournament. But hey, they got it done and won the games they needed to. So double gold in basketball for Team USA. But the moment I knew the Olympics was over and I was done and I had enough Olympics was the rhythmic gymnastics. I couldn't get over this. Five women in unison throwing balls up in the air in different directions and doing cartwheels and flips and spins. It was quite an interesting sight. And that's when I knew it was time to turn off the Olympics. So I appreciate what Tokyo gave me the last 2 weeks, but I'm ready to move on with the Olympics.
Well, I'll suggest two things that you can tune into instead of the Olympics now that I've been paying attention to this last week. That is that Bleachers released in full their new album. So that's out. It's great. It's Bleachers. So if you like Bleachers, you're going to like this album. If you don't like Bleachers,
you basically are their roadie at this point.
If you don't like Bleachers, but you like Taylor Swift and Lorde and a lot of other current pop artists, then you already like Bleachers because they are, Jack Antonoff, who is Bleachers, is the producer of all these artists.
All that stuff you listen to on the radio.
pretty much. So you're going to like Bleachers. So give them a listen. And then I also watched this week for a shameless plug, 3 minute movie reviews. I watched The Suicide Squad, not to be confused with Suicide Squad.
Right. Yeah. Because how could you confuse those two? Right.
Well, they're extremely different, both in terms of they have a different. There's a different black lead actor in each. Idris Elba in this one versus Will Smith in the last one. They both still have Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn. And they both still involve a group of criminals going out and trying to save the world. The only difference is in this case, there's a lot more death and blood and gore. As opposed to the previous Suicide Squad, where there wasn't as much death from the Suicide Squad.
Yeah, I would have gone in a different direction there. I would have gone my entire life thinking there was just one movie there. But thank you for letting me know that it's indeed two, and they are separate entities.
You're welcome. And I will say, this one is much better than the previous one. Much better.
Noted.
So
Love that. Go. Let's get into this week's guest, Mike.
Let's do it. You know, you talked about foot golf, Alex. So it's only fitting that this week you actually decided to talk to someone who hits a soccer ball with their foot for a living.
Yes, right. That makes a lot of sense. Fortuitous timing there, indeed. Obviously, it's Austin FC, a franchise I've talked about, a brand new MLS professional soccer franchise that's landed in my hometown. And it's kind of fun, Mike. I don't think you or I have really had this experience because we've grown up in places that are already established from a sports front. But having just a brand new expansion team, it's a new voyage for me as a sports fan. There's kind of a lot of unfound excitement there, and I'm enjoying the time in the inaugural season. So it's been awesome to have a guy like Matt Beisler hop on, who's not only a key member of the team, but he's got some golf connection as well.
Can't wait to hear this full chat with Matt. But first, as always, want to let you know this interview is brought to you by Desert Fox Golf, our friends of the show and the makers of the Phone Caddy. The Phone Caddy lets you strap your phone right onto the side of your golf cart so it's easy to view and use all day long. No more fumbling around the dark spaces of your golf cart, dropping your phone on the seat, or even worse, onto the grass as you drive away. The Phone Caddy keeps you locked in safely so you can stay locked into your round. It'll be the talk of your foursome and a great gift for any golfer in your life. And for our listeners, you can save 10% off your purchase of a Phone Caddy with the promo code COURSEOFLIFE. It comes in a range of colors, and you can even show your support with their patriotic line. So head on over to DesertFoxGolf.com to get your Phone Caddy, and don't forget to use the promo code COURSEOFLIFE to save 10%. Again, that's promo code COURSEOFLIFE at DesertFoxGolf.com.
Next up on the tee, we've got a Major League Soccer pro, and he's a bit of a golfer as well. He's represented Team USA in the World Cup, and now he's a part of my newest and favorite local sports franchise, talking about Austin FC, and we have Matt Beisler joining the Course of Life. Matt, how you doing this evening?
Doing well. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, man. Great to connect with you. I've enjoyed watching the team in its inaugural season. Obviously, you've had a decorated career at every level of soccer, from high school to college, MLS, international, you name it. You've done it. I'm curious, from a sports perspective, was it always soccer for you growing up, or did you play other sports as a kid?
No, I played a bunch of other sports growing up. I would say pretty typical, like, suburban America childhood. You know, switched from soccer season in the fall to basketball in the winter, you know, soccer again in the spring, baseball for sure in the summer. And then, you know, I would always tell people my favorite sport is whatever season it was. So, you know, in the wintertime, I really did. I liked basketball, and I thought I was going to be in the NBA. And then in the summertime, you know, I just watched baseball 24/7 and practiced baseball only, and I thought I was going to be a Major League Baseball player. And it wasn't until probably halfway through high school, so sophomore, junior year of high school, where I really started focusing in on soccer. That was going to give me the best chance to get a college scholarship, which was my goal at the time, and, you know, kind of what I was working for. So, yeah, I mean, the kids now, I mean, they're just faced with a lot more challenges when it comes to, you know, focusing in on one sport.
Right.
But that wasn't the case when I was a kid. And, you know, I'm actually very grateful that I didn't have to choose a sport at a young age, because I think playing multiple sports has really helped me out in my soccer career.
Definitely. Yeah. It took me a little bit of time to get to golf, but I got there after a lot of other sports as well. I love that well-rounded experience that you had as well. So it took you a little bit longer than the average, maybe soccer pro, to figure out you were going to be professional in soccer. Now, the moment it happened, when you actually got drafted to the MLS, and basically when you knew that would be a reality, how did that whole process set in for you when you realized you're going to play professionally in Major League Soccer?
Yeah, so I mean, even that was late too. So I went to the University of Notre Dame on a soccer scholarship, obviously, and I played a decent amount my freshman year. I wasn't a starter. It was a pretty competitive program at the time, and I just kind of, you know, worked my way through the program and built myself up. And again, I mean, it wasn't until probably in between my junior and senior year, I remember having a meeting with our head coach, Bobby Clark. And he told me just straight up, he goes, look, I don't know if you realize, but you know, you have a pretty good shot at becoming a professional. And so, you know, I know that you're taking it seriously, but I just wanted to let you know, I've talked with, you know, some pro scouts, and, you know, I've been around the game a long time, and you definitely have what it takes if you're willing to do it. And so that's kind of when the light bulb went off in my head. But I mean, even then it was really the night before the draft. You know, I was still nervous about it. Wasn't quite sure where I was going to end up. It's kind of funny when you're going through a draft process, the soccer draft.
What is that like? Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's really like, it's the same as the NBA and the NFL draft. Obviously it's not on national television, and you know, there's not like millions and millions of dollars at stake. So it's a little bit different, but at the same time, I mean, you're sitting there on your couch following the draft, and your entire future is like up in the air. I mean, you're just waiting, and just like with the snap of a finger, you know, your phone rings, you pick up the phone, it's a general manager, and he says, "Hey, I'm with X club." And that's like what you're waiting on. And it could be New York City, it could be Kansas City, it could be Texas, it could be California. And I mean, your life changes. And it's just, it's crazy that there's so many possibilities, and it really is just chance. But, you know, I ended up getting drafted back to Kansas City, which was my hometown. So,
right. Yeah. Very cool.
You know, I was pretty lucky in a lot of ways, being close to family and, you know, getting to experience the whole, you know, hometown guy coming back and playing for his team.
Nice. I love that. And I'm getting big time into the MLS, obviously, now with Austin FC's launch in my home city, which is now yours as well. But tell everyone a little bit about your time in Kansas City, which I don't want to skip over, because you spent the better part of a decade there with Sporting KC. That atmosphere, just a soccer crowd in Kansas City and whatnot. Explain what it was like playing in that city for as long as you did.
Yeah, so I played in Kansas City for 12 years, and wow. Actually my first two seasons we played at a minor league baseball stadium, and I'm grateful that I got to experience that because it made me appreciate the stadium that they have now.
Right.
And so the reason we played there is because the current stadium was being built at the time, and it was a 2-year construction build, and so you know, it was a temporary home, that minor league baseball stadium. And, you know, obviously it wasn't ideal to be playing professional soccer in a minor league baseball stadium. But we got through that, and then we got to open up the brand new stadium, and it was amazing. I mean, it completely changed the team, the organization, the culture, everything. So, you know, I had a lot of very successful years in Kansas City. I was fortunate to be on some great teams. I had some unbelievable teammates along the way. And, you know, we had our fair share of success with a couple different trophies. So a lot of amazing experiences with Kansas City. And like I said, I'm grateful. And, you know, one day I'll hopefully be able to look back on all that and be able to celebrate it.
Yeah, great years there indeed. And obviously a pitcher with the cup, that's always what you want in any run with this professional sporting team. So congratulations on that amazing time. And I'm noticing the theme with the opening of new stadiums as well. You've gotten to do that a second time around here with your stint at Austin FC. With this town being a new venture for MLS, the fervor and passion in this MLS fan base is through the roof. It's captivated myself and a lot of other sporting fans who are just getting introduced to soccer at the professional level. From your perspective, what's kind of been the buildup like being part of this team?
I've been blown away. I really have. Yeah. And I mean, first of all, let me say this. If you have not been to an Austin FC game yet, please, please try and find a way to get a ticket.
Yeah, I'm excited. I was there for the Team USA women game. I'm going to see you in a couple weeks time from now on the 29th. I can't wait because the atmosphere is just, it looks insane.
Yeah, it really is. I think it's already one of the best in the league, which says a lot about the fans. And yeah, you don't really have to be a diehard soccer fan either to enjoy it. I've had a lot of people comments that say, you know, I'm not really into soccer, and you know, I didn't really know what to expect, but I'm telling you what, that Austin FC game, that was one of the best live sporting experiences that I've ever had. And so Again, like I said, I would highly recommend, going to check it out, even if you're a soccer fan or not. But it was pretty clear from the very first day that I got here that there was a lot of buzz around the team. You know, when you sign on as a free agent with an expansion team, you're definitely taking a chance and you're not quite sure what you're getting yourself into. But from the moment I arrived in Austin, the people here have been really, really good to me. Everyone's very friendly. It seems like everyone wants to help out. They're prideful about their city. You know, they want to tell you, you know, go and eat at this place. And, you know, these are the best areas and go check out this spot for, you know, outdoor activities and all these things. So that part's been really fun, enjoyable. And then the soccer part too. I mean, I can't say it enough. The fan support that we've had from day one, it's been, you know, some of the best that I've ever seen in this league.
Awesome to hear. And I just can only imagine what it feels like from you at a field level perspective to see that crowd, Los Verdes, just at it every single night they can at Q2 Stadium. It's awesome to see. Again, Matt Beisler joining us, Austin FC. Let's talk about a couple of big time endorsers of the program here at Austin FC. The first one everyone wants to know about is Matthew McConaughey, obviously the minister of culture and one of the founding figures of Austin FC. I know he's given some pep talks to you guys. What's he like, as a leader and maybe when the cameras go off as well too?
Honestly, I mean, we've interacted with him just a few times. He's got a couple personal reasons, some family members who are at high risk for COVID. And so he's having to be a little careful with just how much exposure he has. But when we have interacted with him in person, I mean, what you see on camera is what you get in person. And, you know, he's authentic as they get, and his energy levels are, I don't know how he does it. It's pretty impressive when he gets in front of a group and he starts speaking, his energy is just through the roof.
Yeah, you end up leaning in whenever you hear him talk. Very infectious, you know?
Yeah. So he was great. I mean, you can tell that he's very excited. He's passionate about Austin. He's passionate about soccer and being a part of the club. And, the advice that he gave us was, I thought was really good. It was spot on. You know, he just was really emphasizing, us being the first and us, being the first professional team in Austin and really just taking advantage of that and embracing it.
Love that. Awesome. Let's talk about another endorser who's also a big soccer fan. We love following him in the world of golf. Talking about Dylan Fratelli, who I know you spent some time with, a guy that has not only sunk a national championship winning putt, he's a PGA Tour winner and definitely one of the better up and rising players in the world. Big Austin and big soccer fan as well, too. How did you first get in contact with Dylan when you arrived here in Austin?
Yeah. So, I mean, first of all, he's the man. He's just so nice. What an ambassador for UT and for the city of Austin. I know that he's still a resident here. So we first met, a few months ago at Austin Country Club, for the match play event.
Nice. Cool. I was out there too. I love volunteering there every year. It's a favorite spot of mine.
Yeah, so I have an old college friend. His name's Michael Ramirez, and we went to college together at Notre Dame. He's a member there, and he invited me to go out to one of the practice rounds. And I had never been to a practice round. I've never been to a PGA Tour event.
Oh wow!
So I didn't really know what to expect, and just being able to like walk the course and be out there and to see some of these like PGA Tour players just like live in person, it was awesome. I loved it. It wasn't very crowded. I think it was either Monday or Tuesday. But there was still some COVID protocols in place. And so there was hardly anybody on the course. But we got to see some really cool PGA Tour players, but we were on the putting green, just kind of hanging out, and Dylan was putting. And somehow we got to talking to each other, and I introduced myself, and soccer came up, and I told him that I was, a player for Austin FC, and we really just hit it off. And I mean, he really is. He's a huge soccer fan, being from South Africa originally. He played at a very high level growing up.
It seems like
for
it,
people
yeah.
that don't know. Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, we just really connected with soccer. I'm a big golf fan, and, you know, we stayed in touch over the next couple of weeks. And, I saw that he actually wore an Austin FC jersey on the first tee. I think it was the second or third round of the US Open.
Correct, at Torrey Pines. Yeah, that's what I was exactly. going to bring up next. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of where, like, I guess our social media relationship went to the next level. Is he wore that jersey at Torrey Pines, and I just thought it was really cool. Like, I mean, I don't know. Is that even allowed? Like, I assume that's not allowed.
It's not like, really super encouraged, but he just knew he would do it just for the first tee shot. And if you just do it temporarily, and I'm sure he cleared it with the officials, but yeah, it was a very bold move on his part. And it was cool to showcase that because he was playing well. It's the weekend of a major championship, and he wanted to show you guys off on that day because it was the opener. It was really cool to see.
I totally agree. And that was really fun. One of the cool things that I got to experience in Kansas City was just like how the professional teams, like the different sports, all connected and showed each other support. And so, you know, I got that similar feeling with Dylan, and yeah, it was really cool to see it. It pumped me up. And so I jokingly, you know, I texted him and said, "Hey man, like, thanks for the love, you know, really appreciate it. That was super cool what you did. And, you know, our next home game, I'm going to dress up like you, if you don't mind." And
what was his reaction to that?
He just started laughing. And I think he thought I was like half serious. But I was 100% serious. And so, sure enough, yeah, our next home game, I came dressed fully as Dylan Fratelli. I had, you know, all of his sponsored, like the Callaway. I had the Oakleys on, which are, you know, his signature sunglasses. And so it was really fun. I think he got a kick out of it. I think a lot of people enjoyed it, and it certainly it put everyone in a pretty good mood, I think.
Yeah, you had every part of that look down. I think I saw the sleeves too. You matched the shades perfectly. And it was a great moment on social media for you two for sure. I hear you've gotten out to play with him as well too. What's it been like kind of just maybe picking his brain from a golf perspective? I know you're busy with life, not only with family and soccer, and don't have time to play much, but when you do kind of get to hang out with him, what are you looking to pick up from a golf perspective from a guy like Dylan?
Yeah, so I don't get out much. I love golf, watch a lot of golf, follow it pretty closely. But I've got three little kids at home, all under the age of five. And so yes. I don't have a lot of time.
Very busy.
Besides being a professional soccer player. So I've gotten out a few times here in Austin. One of those times was with Dylan, and it was cool. I mean, that was my first ever time, you know, playing alongside a PGA Tour professional. So, I mean, they just hit the ball different. It's hard to explain unless you've experienced it. It's really fun to experience and fun to watch. You know, he was out there, you know, very relaxed, but just their ability to like shape shots. And it's like they have so many shots in their pocket, and you can see them. You can see him like the way that he practices. And I don't even think we kept score that closely. But again, I mean, he hit some pretty ridiculous shots. That's for sure.
Yeah, he's an all-world talent for sure. We're going to see him on a lot more leaderboards in the years to come. Again, joined by Matt Beisler from Austin FC. It's Matt Beisler on Instagram. You can follow him on socials as well. Obviously, he's playing for Austin FC right now in the middle of their inaugural season. Let's finish with just a few quick shot questions. There's a lot of great like fan chants right now at the inaugural season for Austin FC fans. As far as the players go, what do you guys love hearing the most from the fans? Is there a favorite chant inside the locker room?
So I don't know if these are chants, but there's two moments that happen that I've noticed so far that I really enjoy. So there's one, and again, I'm playing the game like while this happens,
right,
so it's
yes.
really hard for me to like pay attention, you know, like 100%. But the fans do this chant where like it slowly builds up. and you can like feel it happening in the stadium. And then all of a sudden everybody just like jumps up in the air and starts going crazy and like throwing beers. And like, there's a few times where it caught me off guard, 'cause like all of a sudden, like the noise just changes and I have to like look behind me and I see this just huge party. I mean, it looks like a mosh pit, like back in the stands, and everyone's just going crazy. And I don't know if there's any rhyme or reason to it, or like if there's a name for it, but they're definitely like in sync with it. And that's really cool to experience. The other thing that happens in the stadium is with the, in the old school days, it'd be a lighter, but now everyone just uses their cell phone flashlights. But there's a period in the game where everybody like takes out their phone and turns on their flashlight and like waves it in the air. And when you're down on the field, you know, obviously you're focusing on the game, but when that's happening in the stands, that's a really special moment for sure.
Yeah, it like, kind of like puts you in the middle of a dream there. That's a very neat perspective.
Yes,
there.
Exactly.
Neat. One other story I had to touch on. I did just enough research to find out that you were definitely growing up in a rowdy household with the brothers of yours. And unfortunately, you suffered an injury at the hands of a golf club. I heard one of your brothers hit you with a golf club. I got to know, what do we remember? Was it an iron or a wood or a wedge or a putter? What happened there?
Yeah, so we grew up on a little bit of acreage. So we had a pretty big backyard, just like open space for just kids to run around. I have two younger brothers and we used to just kind of like mess around and play golf in the backyard, you know, just making up holes and like, you know, this tree, you know, it's 50 yards away. Like that's hole one. And then the next hole is, you know, so-and-so just like out in the middle of nowhere. You know, obviously three boys, like things got competitive and, you know, whatever, something happened, one thing led to another. And, my younger brother ended up, you know, blindsiding me from behind with a golf club. It actually wasn't the club face. It was the grip side, which I don't know what's worse, because like the way that it hit me like in the back of the leg. So like my hamstring.
Yeah.
And I mean, I had like a welt and, you know, I think I was bruised for like 2 weeks, but, I don't remember how old we were. I think I was probably like 12. It hurt a lot. There was it definitely made me cry. I know that.
And credit to you for working through the pain. 'Cause I heard it was a don't tell mom or dad household. So you just had to keep that to yourself too, amidst the injury. So,
oh yeah. That's the brother code right there. Whatever happens with the babysitters or whenever mom and dad are away, it stays within the brother. So that one was a tough one to bite my tongue.
Yeah, I love that moment. Had to bring that one up. And then we always love ending here with a food related question. So I know everyone's giving you the suggestions of all the great places to go in Austin, whether it's tacos or barbecue or whatever your favorite cuisine is. Why don't you just let everyone know what are your go-to spots that you've enjoyed so far for your time here in Austin?
All right. I mean, first of all, the breakfast taco scene, like it's ridiculous. I didn't know what I was getting myself into.
Yeah.
I knew elaborate. Breakfast tacos were a thing down here, but like, I didn't know like they were the thing. I mean, there's like a breakfast taco spot on every corner, the food trucks. I mean, it's legit. So, really enjoyed, you know, dabbling in the breakfast taco scene. That's been good. My wife and I, we went to Red Ash, downtown. It's an Italian place.
Very nice.
Really, really good. You know, we ordered a bunch of food, way too much. But we just kind of split everything. That had really good food. In terms of the barbecue, that's a sensitive subject for me, 'cause I'm coming from Kansas City, which,
that's right. There is a little bit of beef there on barbecue kingdom.
Yes, there is. So I'm not going to touch that one.
Jury's still out for you on that, right? We need a few more seasons, maybe.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, good barbecue is good barbecue. So like, whether it's in Texas, Kansas City, like they're both really good. You know, yeah. So Red Ash, I would say, sticks out to us. You know, we've enjoyed checking out South Congress. That's definitely a cool spot when family members come into town to visit. You know, we usually spend an afternoon like walking up and down the strip. We usually stop in at some place. I think it was Joanne's is a diner there that was good. Perla's was another place that we went for a lunch that was really good. So a lot of good food spots in Austin, that's for sure.
Yeah, you're checking off all the right places for sure. Keep it going. Enjoy your time here with the family and obviously enjoy your time with Austin FC. I hope it's a nice long run. It's been great having you, Matt Beisler, on Course of Life. And when you do get out to the course next time, make sure you hit him straight. Okay.
I will do my best.
And we're back. Great chat there with Matt Beisler. Love that he dresses up before each game, really digging the Ted Lasso look, because Ted Lasso is just fantastic. So,
I mean, that works pretty well with the theme of being a professional soccer player. This is a nice little game of dress up he's playing, I see. And I commend him on going all the way with the Dylan Fratelli look. He got the sleeves, the sunglasses, everything he possibly could. The question is, like, well, who is he going to dress up as next? There's so many directions he could go with this.
I mean, I feel like the hot name right now is Lionel Messi. So,
oh yes, he could another soccer player. That'd be a fun one. I mean, he's going to have to do a mocking Matthew McConaughey outfit at some point, right? I don't whether that's an old school McConaughey or maybe new school one. I mean, he had those conversations about the wise words he's gotten from Matthew. So that's definitely in the works as well.
If he's going to do that, he's got to show up to the game at a Lincoln.
Yes, of course, because everything Matthew McConaughey does is always in a Lincoln for those people at home who are wondering, just in case you didn't know.
All right, let's talk some football. We are well into the beginning of the preseason. What are you thinking about your quarterback? We're going to ask this question every week. Who's your quarterback?
Yeah, well, it's game one live bullets Thursday night for the Patriots and this weekend for all the other teams as well, too. Giants are Saturday first look. So I'm just curious to see what the split is, you know, between the rookie and Cam Newton. Who's getting the snaps? I'm curious the way they look on the sideline. Who's kind of mopey with their shoulders shrugged versus who's knee deep in the clipboard and the playbook, getting the research done and watching the coverages when they need to. So I'm just dissecting everything way too much for August, basically, is the bottom line. And I'm just salivating for football at this point, even if it's the most meaningless preseason game you can find. I'm going to be all over it.
Yeah, I'm happy for you, because meanwhile, my Giants are slowly being turned into the Cowboys as Jason Garrett brings in another pass cowboy onto the squad. So I'm just going to slowly sink into oblivion as my Giants turn into their heated rival.
Love that. Yeah. And speaking of the Cowboys, too, we're going to get the weekly Hard Knocks recaps, too. The random storylines from HBO's Hard Knocks. And this year's team, Mike, is the Dallas Cowboys. So that means we're going to get a whole lot of Mike McCarthy. You remember him as the former Packers coach. Mm-hmm. He's now at the home in Dallas. He's got a big personality, but more importantly, we're going to get somewhat of a candid Jerry Jones, which is always interesting because he's liable to say anything. I know he's going to try and be careful, but his words and his attitude will get the better of him. So I'm looking forward to seeing some candid Jerry Jones moments from training camp in Oxnard for the Cowboys. And yeah, Hard Knocks gets going this week as well too. So we'll have weekly recaps as we head into the NFL season.
And, you know, there's great timing with football season rolling up because now my Yankees are playing well. So the Giants I'm already tired of. So the Yankees are playing better again and your Red Sox are sucking. So I'm back in on baseball after saying baseball season was over and I was looking forward to, you know, water polo season. So go Yankees and your Red Sox suck.
Yeah, nobody rewind the tapes to May or June when you threw and started digging their grave very deep. You really went way down deep with the grave, too. But now it's me fully on the panic button. Red Sox are like four back in the division. Lots of things to be worried about right now. Everything is crumbling at the seams in Boston. So yeah, this is pretty much the way we love it in the AL East. Just a back and forth roller coaster that goes all the way to the last weekend, just like every year.
And all you need to know is the Tampa Bay Rays are the best team in the American League right now. So.
Yeah, I know. You and I just refuse to talk about them because, like, we're so hard headed, just thinking it's just a Red Sox versus Yankees division every year. And then Tampa Bay does this like once every few years where they just sneak up and just blow us both out of the water, and we're left to shrug our shoulders. But really, it's kind of our fault.
You know? Yeah. You know. Oh, well, let's get our minds off of all that and let's hashtag always end with food.
Yes. Shout out to Toasty Bites. Hashtag always end with food. Our promo code is COL20 for 20% off, or just head to toasty.com/COL. I did a little viral food trend this past week, Mike. I got down and dirty with it. I was tempted. I kept seeing it on Instagram and I made pasta chips. Have you seen these going around the internet at all? It's been very popular.
I don't have TikTok. I don't do that.
Yeah.
So I'm too old and curmudgeon for that.
They're making pasta chips. Essentially, all you did was you just take some pasta, you cook it like normal. You take the water, boiling water out, and then you just throw them on a tray. You put, you know, your choice of seasoning on there, Parmesan cheese, Italian spices, salt and pepper, and you just let them bake and they just get really crunchy. It's like the crunchiest potato chip you'll ever have with a little bit of an Italian flair. Maybe dip them in some pasta sauce. Overall, I give mine about a 6 out of 10. I don't know what's missing, but I think I may have cooked the pasta too much. There's definitely an art to how long you cook the pasta in advance.
Well, I would wonder, typically you want your pasta when you're cooking it to eat soft. You want it al dente. You want it a little toothsome. If you're going to be baking it again, do you want to boil it all the way so it's like done?
Yeah, and they suggested baking it to boiling it to al dente. And I'm just so used to boiling it to like the way I like to eat it, which is much softer than that. I think I went too far. So maybe I'll do a second attempt, but nonetheless, the pasta chips, they are a real thing and a pretty tasty snack too.
All right, well, I appreciate that you just admitted that you overcook your pasta, so thank you for that. Meanwhile, on my side of the world here, in bakery a la Russell here, I think there's just more and more evidence that I should open up my own bakery, because I made cookies this weekend. We had inventory at my retail store, so I made cookies for the store team. And every single person said that I should open a bakery, including my general manager, who said I should go open a bakery. So
I'd be like, fine, throw your uniform down and be like, all right, I'll see you later. I'm going over to bakery. That'll catch them by surprise. But nonetheless, how fast was the cookie inventory gone? Because that's always the telltale sign of how popular they were.
I mean, everyone took some. I'm still like individually packing them. So I'm packing them in groups of three because, you know, COVID.
Aren't you precious? Like that.
I know. I'm a nice guy. Don't tell anyone I said that. The chocolate chip cookies. I've talked about these cookies before, I think, on the podcast. It's a chocolate cookie that I make with regular and dark cocoa powder. And then there's semi-sweet chocolate chips and white chocolate chips in it. And it's like a brownie almost. It's fantastic.
So that sounds absolutely divine. And I'm glad your coworkers got to experience that sweet morsely goodness there. And those cookies, indeed. That was hashtag always in with food and a wrap on this week's Course of Life. Another great episode coming at you next week. Until then, everyone have a good week.